she's clean, but what you don't know is I'm low and deep within her crib. That girl's got something inside her eyes. Her kisses to you just wanna die. I'll break for something you can't deny. That girl's got murder inside her eyes. I go somewhere in her eyes when I'm burning up inside. Someplace no one else can find. Somewhere no
greetings and welcome to Baron's Crypt Visions of Horror Episode 2. Yes, as your host again is I, Baron Craze. Well, you know, this week basically runs from September 4th to the 10th. And I know what you're saying, Baron, today's not the 10th. Today's the 11th. Yes. As I told you last week, this show may air on a Saturday or it may air on a Sunday, depending on how the week goes. Well, my week went with, hey, guess what? You know, since you spent some time in the hospital and you're out and you've got to play the game by the doctor's rules and you've got to get used to going to see people that you don't want to go see. So what does that mean? That means I lost a whole day of work. And that course rolled over and hey, here we go. It is basically, I guess, Sunday morning. I'll get it straight. Sunday morning, the 11th, which is a day of a lot of different things. It's a day to remember horror. It's a day to remember those that were lost. And it's a day just to go through. And it's kind of difficult because, you know, here I am in Jersey. And where I was living at the time, when that fateful day occurred, basically, I knew a lot of guys who were in the military, mainly pilots, if you would. I never seen guys in their kind of, I guess, I don't say flight suit. I don't know what you want to call it. Say their fatigues, all right? I mean, burrowing out of their little apartments and everything, getting into the cars, and I mean, just hauling ass. I mean, they're gone. That will always be obviously very fresh in my mind. Of course, seeing those pictures there on the screens and, you know, the whole thing. Well, anyway, listen, we've got, great week of horror that I watched, and that's the entire thing about Visions of Horror. And yesterday, I actually watched two movies on that day. It'll come clear of why I actually did that. But let's start off. So on September 4th, Sunday, I watched the film The Sleepless Unrest, The Real Conjuring Home from 2021. Now, already the title, Sleepless Unrest. Redundant terminology there. If you are sleepless, you're at unrest. So what? Why are you telling me the word twice over? Should have been really a red flag for me right then and there, right? But someone put it on the list, and I have to watch what is on the Visions of Horror list. Again, it's not a list that I always pick the film for. Other people are choosing the movies, and I just have to trust that they pick something good, or in this case, not so good. Yes, let's get into it a little bit, shall we? All right. Oh, I should have mentioned before I get too far into this, The music at the beginning of the show was Nimvid with the track That Girl. If you go to the horrortimes.com site, you scroll down to podcasts and you'll find this show, you'll find out that, hey, there is a music video that you probably would really much enjoy, so you should check it out. All right, now on to The Sleepless Unrest. The directors are Kendall Wilpington and also Vera Wilpington. Stars Corey Heinzen, also Jennifer Heinzen, and a John Huntington. Basically, the summary of this movie. Here we go. The world-famous house that inspired the Conjuring film has recently been sold and is now open to paranormal investigations. With some special access, a small group of filmmakers and paranormal investigators are allowed to move into the famously haunted home for 2 weeks in hopes of capturing evidence. During this time, the group will be experiencing, investigating, and documenting every moment. Will they be able to make it through their stay, and do the malevolent spirits still haunt this home, or is something more sinister lurking about? Ooh. The film technically has a 4 out of 10 rating, but I would not put it that high. I would put it down around a 3 and nosediving further. We'll get into why. All right, moving right along. This film did premiere, if you would, on July 16th of 2021. The company was Gravitas Ventures. Gave it worldwide media coverage. Taglines for the film, there are two. The Real Conjuring Home. That's part of the title. And the other one is No Sleep for the Restless. A little bit better. I mean, when you tell me the title is called The Sleepless Unrest, The Real Conjuring Home, and your tagline is The Real Conjuring Home, I've got to give a red flag one more time. That is called cheating, okay? If you're the person out there who's made a film and you're hiring somebody as a tagline doctor, I am a tagline doctor. That's our job, to come up with taglines, not to take your title and to use part of it as the tagline. Well, what the hell does that work? We already understand that The Sleepless Unrest. We have it repeated twice. Okay. Then we've got The Real Conjuring Home. Both these taglines are basically the title. That's what they are. That tells me they didn't have anything to put down for a tagline. They couldn't come up with the first thing. All right. References? Nothing. Available on Pluto TV and Tubi. Now for my opinion. Oh, you know I had to kind of, as somebody said, you got to dial this back. And I said, is it my show? Yes. Then I don't. Boring and reverie fake? Oh, yeah. I would highly agree with that kind of terminology. That's what somebody said. And I'm just saying, somebody else said it, and I'm saying, yes, I agree with that. Now, cover my own spins on this. If this is supposed to be a documentary, is that what you're trying to go for? Then why on earth do documentaries always do this? They always want to put in the spooky music and the sound effects. Why? What is the purpose? If you're trying to be documenting something actual, then you don't need to do that. I can see you putting maybe a particular song at the beginning of the movie, maybe something on a closeout, but you really don't need to give me a spooky music and everything. I mean, what's next? Fog machines going off too? I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't like it. And then you can actually have a drinking game during this movie. Every time somebody says, hey, did you hear something? You can take a shot of whatever drink you want to. It doesn't matter what it is because, you know, if you go with the liquor, then you are going to be drunk by the end of the movie. And if you go with something else, well, at least you'll be somewhat well hydrated. Let me try to give you kind of a summary of this movie. I'm going to break this down in very simple terms for you. About 30 minutes is of people getting to the house. Okay. And then we got about, another 30 minutes of really nothing happening. And then another 30 minutes of nothing really happening. And then we're outside. And nothing else is happening. Okay? I mean, that's really what you got here. You could play on your phone and watch this movie and look down for 20 minutes and then look up and you will not have missed a thing. So, there you guys go for that. All right, moving on to moving on to Monday. I'll get the week straight, trust me. September 5th, I watched Paranormal Activity from 2007. I watched this again. I've seen it a few times. This movie is celebrating an anniversary here, 15 years. It's available on Prime and Epix. That's E-P-I-X. The director is, I know I'm going to screw this up, but I'm going to take a shot at Oren. That's O-R-E-N. Now, I'm not going to get the last name. P-E-L-I. He directed another film since then called Area 51. And you may say, Baron, why are you telling this other information? Well, we're tweaking the show a little bit. We got some feedback from some of you, and it was very nice of you to give me that. You would like to know some other things about these people. Where I can and I will, I'll throw in a couple of pieces of information. All right? All right, so the writer, again, was same guy. And as for something else he wrote, Chernobyl Diaries from 2012. Now, it stars Katie Featherstone. I know I'm screwing that name up, but I'm trying my best. Her first horror film was Mutation from 2006. Then there's M-I-C-A-H space Slot, S-L-O-A-T. Again, I'm trying my best. I always told you people, I will butcher, slaughter, slash, and dismember people's names. One day, I will figure out a way to do a show without doing that. I'm hoping I figure it out one day soon. I don't like butchering people's names. And Ashley Palmer, the company that later signed on for this was Paramount Pictures, which then re-released the film, I should say, in 2009. So just kind of let you know that. Now, as for the summary, I think everybody knows it, but here you go. After a young middle-class couple move into a suburban starter track house, they become increasingly disturbed by a presence that may or may not be somehow demonic, but is certainly most active in the middle of the night, especially when they sleep, or at least try to. The film got a 6.3 out of 10. It's got a pretty good, interesting, some taglines here. So let's pick it up. Now, I should mention the last one here is far too long for a tagline. Remember, taglines are meant to be 3 to 5 words. They should be somewhere centered in your poster. If you got it at the top, that's not really great. That should be where the title is. There should be somewhere in the middle of the poster. Something maybe middle, 3/4 down. Right above your credits, that's be perfect. So here are the taglines. All right. What happens when you sleep? All right, not bad. I mean, it's five words. Don't see it alone. That can work if you're trying to do this for a movie night. Dare you experience the U.S. phenomenon? This was on the U.K. posters. Basically, actually, it's on the U.K. quad posters. Those are huge posters. Don't go alone. Another one from the U.K. Demand it. And then, now you can experience the phenomenon that is paranormal activity in the comfort and safety of your own home. Okay. If this film is on a shelf at a store or wherever else you could purchase it, then I think we understand the concept that I will be watching it in my own home. So there you go. All right, so it premiered on October 14th in 2007 at the Screamfest Horror Film Festival. Some trivia, and we got quite a bit of trivia here for you all, so let's get into it. So I do want to mention that the director of the film is right now producing Insidious 5. Just kind of throwing this out there. This is the Lamberts 10 years after the last installment as Dalton begins for college. This movie is slated to come out on July 7th of 2023. Just figured I'd throw that out there, let you guys know what's going on. Now, this was made on a budget of approximately $15,000. Paramount acquired the U.S. rights for $350,000. The film went on to gross $193 million worldwide. Now, I figured that only means at the box office. I don't think that includes DVD or Blu-ray sales. Making the film the second most profitable film ever made based on the return of investment. The first is the Blair Witch Project, which cost about $22,000 and made $240.5 million. So there you guys go. So Katie Featherston, I think that's how we say her name, and the guy who plays the husband, which is, again, I still don't know how to say his name, which is called Mr., and then it's S-L-O-A-T, received a reported $500 each for their performances. Due to the success of the film, they immediately renegotiated the amount. No shit, wouldn't you? I mean, wait a minute. The film makes how much? $193 million. And all you got from it was $500. Oh, yeah. Hello, Mr. Lawyer. I need to do something about this. I mean, come on. You know, you knew as soon as the film did all that, you already knew that these people were going to come back for their money. Which, let's face it, you would do it too. All right, the actors weren't given scripts. They were kind of given guidelines for a scene. Let them behave natural, if you would. That way they could kind of discuss the scene on their own and then come up with their lines, which is pretty good. And that's really going out there. That's a lot of ad-libbing. That's a lot of trust in what these actors can do. And that kind of works both ways. You can get really wooden acting from that. You may get a lot of hums and or you may get some nice good banter and good flow with it. So I think that could work out. I would say maybe if your actors can spend at least a couple of hours together and get a feel for each other in the sense of how they talk, their actions, they use their hands, or are they more still in that? How do they react when they get angry? You know, do they get loud? Do they get quiet? They get reserved, you know, all these kind of different things. So there are some kind of tweaks to that. Now, this movie has an interesting book. It's a 1971 trade paperback from Dover Publications called Picture Book of Devils, Demons, and Witchcraft by Ernest and Johanna, and here we go, L-E-H-N-E-R. Now, just so you're aware, again, you go to the script for this show, you're going to find a link on Amazon for this book. I do want to note it for you all. that this is primarily, a book of artwork. All right? You're not going to get a lot of words in this book. So if you're looking for historical aspects to the drawings, not this book. If you're looking for pictures, this book. This book goes for about a retail of $17. The Ouija board, well, that was easy enough. That was bought at a local Costco. So there you guys go for that. Because people are always, you know, asking, what was that book in there? Was it a real book? Is that book available? So yes, you can buy that book. An average price of it is $17. And like I said, it's just pictures. Now, I'm going to skip one of these for just a moment, get back to it. You know, the entire film obviously was shot with a home digital camera and then edited on a home PC. So nothing fancy was done. Steven Spielberg stated that he had to stop watching the film halfway through at a home screening. And then, because it was seriously just spooked from the whole thing, and then really completed the film in the daylight where he had lights on and was more content in watching it. So I always find that interesting. Now, for those who are curious, there was a death metal band on the television in the first kind of shot of the film. This band is called Disgorge. They are from San Diego and they're performing the song Consume the Forsaken. Now, you may say, well, Baron, that's nice. Thanks for giving me that little tidbit. Why are you telling me that? Well, you see, the reason I'm telling you that is I have permission from a certain label, which is called Unique Leader Records. And I have permission to play everything on this label. So I'm going to play you a very, very, very short little piece of this music. And you may say, why? Enjoy. So how was that? In the beginning, you have all these kind of demonic sounds going on. And then the song just goes right into sheer death metal, if you would. And you really got to experience it. How often do you get that on a show? Oh, I know. I messed up in the head. I know. All right. It jumped in there a little bit sooner than I wanted to, but I couldn't stop it. So what's the point? All right, so a little references for you. It was followed by Paranormal Activity 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 coming out in 2021. Had its two spinoffs. One was called Paranormal Activity 2, Tokyo Night. That was a Japanese spinoff. And then we had Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones. That was one that came out during 2014. So that was another spinoff that occurred there. If you're curious, that Marked Ones would have followed between number 4 and technically number 5, which was also known as Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension. So just kind of throw that out there. Now, some of my thoughts on this. Well, it's got originality. Okay, it's not a copy of anybody else. It's not a reboot, a remake, a reimagining. It's original. All right, it does generate a lot of suspense and tension in the film. If you're the type of person that is, you're not looking for that cheap scare, although, let's face it, I think there's about one, maybe two in there that can really get to you. This is a great film to watch. It doesn't have the gore or the TNA or any of that. It is a film that you should watch at home in the dark. With your girlfriend, boyfriend, whoever, some family friends over. This is the type of film that will freak people out. If you know somebody, and I actually do, I know a person who does not like the dark. They hate the dark, all right? and they don't like watching a scary movie in the dark. So why are they my friend? Because we share other interests. All right. The acting, you know, it's so-so, so be aware of that. I think the only downside that I really found was probably that static view of the camera. That's the one thing in these type of movies that really bothers me, is that static camera. All right, I'm watching it. Am I going to get that screaming effect where you got something that jumps up in front of it? You know, it doesn't really happen, but I'm not really pleased with that, okay? And I got to state this. This seems to be such a big question for people. It is not real. It is not real. It's a fake documentary style. Made popular by such films as The Blair Witch Project from 1999. And even Cannibal Holocaust from 1980 and Cannibal Ferox from 1981. So, you know, it's not real. I mean, there's so many people out there that think it's real. And I couldn't believe how many. I have met people that goes, man, that was a real film. Really? And they made all these other sequels to it. Excuse me, is the demonic voice or demonic spirits and all this getting paid through their unions? Because I swear that is really well worked there for you to train those demonic spirits to keep showing up on cue. I mean, come on. It's a little strange, right? All right. Okay, moving on to our next day of the week. All right, now that brings us to September 6th, Tuesday, with the film called The Cremators from 1972. It's a PG, about 1 hour and 15 minutes long. It's got a 50-year anniversary. It's available on Tubi. The director is Harry Essex. Now, I know you're going to say, that name sounds familiar. Yes, if you know your old-school horror, it is. Harry was also the writer who he had written in his lifetime there scripts for the classic 1950s fright features of It Came from Outer Space and, in 1954, The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Also helping out on the writing work there was Julian C. May. Now, just to give you a little note here on The Creature from the Black Lagoon, if you're into watching some of these classic films up on the big screen, I think it's I think it's Cinemark that's doing this. Could be other theaters, but I think it's Cinemark. That's where my tickets are. They're having a special engagement. I think it's on October 29th, which is a Saturday. And that event also is going to have a double feature to it, which is The Phantom of the Opera. So definitely check that out. Really, I already got my tickets booked for it, so I hope you do too. All right, next is the cast. All right, and that includes Maria D. Aragon, Marvin Howard, Mason Clawfield, and Eric Allison. The companies, well, let's see, back in 72, it was New World Pictures with a theatric release, and then a DVD release in 2002 from Retro Media Entertainment. Summary. An alien life form that is a huge ball of living matter invades Earth and replenishes itself by absorbing people. Kind of sounds like The Blob a little bit, but it wasn't. The Blob is a good movie. This isn't. This has got a 2.6, and people are being generous on that 0.6. I would not be so generous. Oh, no. Oh, God. Two bad movies so early in the week. Oh, but that sometimes happens. People don't not considerate of my feelings about movies. So what do? They say, here, Baron, you got to watch it. And I watch it so you people don't have to. Taglines. Oh, God. I saw this the first time, and I still can't believe they use this. All right, here we go. Great balls of fire, scorching, ravaging, engulfing. Oh, God. From the sun came the fire people to incinerate all mankind. Oh, I need a rest. All right. So I think you guys know what I'm going to think about this movie, right? We got some sluggish pacing in this movie. I mean, my God, somebody fix the editing. Do something better. If you're trying to figure out, Baron, I'm always trying to understand what you mean by a sluggish movie. Watch this and you shall learn. You do, look, how should I put this? There's a simple rule in filmmaking. It's a simple one. Tell your story in the straightest, most clear-cut methodology possible. And if your story, for whatever reason, tops in under 80 minutes, then it does. And you deal with that. Now, how do you make sure your film won't do that? Simple. Each page of your movie, okay, your movie screenplay, that's a minute. That's the average. So, here's a piece of advice. Write 100 pages. That way, you've got 10 minutes of leftover time. So if you need to cut, if something doesn't work out in your budget, there's a problem, you've got 10 extra pages. You're not sitting there trying to come up with 150 things to put in your movie and expand it. You already have it. Now, rule number two, and this is very important. Listen carefully. Independent filmmakers, odds are you are not going to be able to assemble a huge crowd of people to work on your movie. Not going to happen. The rarity of it is slim. Therefore, you must be able to at least have yourself, your cinematographer, somebody for sound. Now that's three. Now you could double as the sound person if you know what you're doing. Lighting's got to be there. And you got to figure your actor should be one to two people, depending. And you got to be ready for somebody not showing up, because you know that's going to happen. Which means you've got to hope to God you have a friend on set that at least can fake their way through the scene. And you might, at that point, have to move. Okay, I was supposed to do scene, I don't know. I'm supposed to do scene 12. And really, in this situation, I'm so screwed, I got to do scene 17. And you've got to make it work. It's just how life is. It's difficult. I'm not going to tell you it's easy. If it was easy, everybody would be a filmmaker. It's not. Basically, I had to be honest. When I first saw the artwork for this film and things, I thought, hey, this looks to be some sort of 70s satanic mumbo jumbo type of movie. This will be interesting. I was all geared up. But, oh God, it's not that. It's really not that. It's a cheap. Did I say cheap? Extremely cheap. Sci-fi movie. Let me put it this way. Let's say you're invited to a really nice place and you're thinking, okay, they're going to have, you know, really great seafood, probably some nice steak. And when you arrive, what you have is imitation seafood, all right? And, I don't know, McDonald's meets Burger King fast food. And that's what you have. So you think one thing going in, and reality is you're getting this on the back end. I think that's the clearest way I can describe this movie. You expect filet mignon, and you get McDonald's. You expect, you know, scrumptious seafood, and you're getting imitation seafood. Not that great. Okay? So, there you guys go. All right, let's move right along to September 7th, Wednesday. We have the Mansion of the Living Dead from 1982. This is an hour and 37 minutes long. Now, this film is celebrating an anniversary, although it doesn't need to. It is 40 years old. Woo! All right. The director and writer is Jesus Franco. If you know Franco's work, which is more of exploitation kind of films, then you understand what we have in front of us. All right. He stars Lina Romay, Antonio Mayans, and Eva Leon. Hopefully I got those names right. I am praying. All right. The companies that put out the film was Retro Media Entertainment. Was a DVD. So you obviously know they came out much later. And probably around maybe 2002. And then Severn Films just recently released this movie on a Blu-ray. In fact, how recent? This year. All right, summary for the movie. Oh, here you guys go. A group of vacationing waitresses visit a resort hotel on the Canary Islands, only to find that, one, they're by themselves, and two, the former monastery monks nearby have decided to return as the living dead. Now, that's that. Now, this film, for some reason, has got a 4.2 out of 10. I think I know the reason why, which we will get to in just a few moments. The tagline, it's a crazy Jess Franco experiment. Well, it is crazy. Experimental. I wouldn't go that far. But I would say it was his movie. There's no question about it. The release date for this film was September 1982 in West Germany. You may say, really? That's where it got released? Yes, that's where it got released. Now, some people think this movie was released in several countries as the fifth part of the Blind Dead series, even though it has absolutely no connection to that series. None. Now, basically, let me try to explain why I think the film's got a 4.2 rating, which is about 2 points too high already. And I mean 2.0. So basically, what we have here are, I don't know how to put this. Sexploitation, I think, is the best word I can come up with. That's the nicest way of saying this. I mean, let's face it. When you have torture chambers and Inquisition and sadistic zombie monks, and some of them are not very good looking, by the way, and several murders, of course, are taking place, and two sex attacks are going on, I think we all know what kind of film we have here. This type of movie is trying to play off of maybe using the film, what is that, Erotic Nights of the Living Dead, and taking that, which was already a very strange movie and thoroughly leaving bad taste in one's mouth, and pushing it even further. Why? I really don't know. I guess just because TNA sells, and I guess if you put enough zombies for something with TNA, ta-da! It's a movie. We all can celebrate now. If that's what you want, there you go. I should tell you this much. I'm going to say in about 45 minutes of watching this movie, nothing's going to make sense. And that's okay, because I don't think the script made sense. I think the director thought he had a plan going in, but he wrote the script and maybe he forgot to write part of the script. I mean, I don't know. There's just so much, excuse the term, so much shit going on that I really can't figure out what's going on. I literally paused the movie. Somebody gave me the DVD. I paused it, I backed it up, I watched it again, I backed it up, I was trying to go, what the hell is going on here? Am I missing something? Yes. Yes, you are. That's what people are trying to tell me. You are missing the point of watching this movie, which is to waste your time. Ah, thank you very much. You've been wonderful in wasting my time. You all don't need to do that. All right. On September 8th and 9th, there was no film watching. This is because I had a couple medical procedures I had to do, and I couldn't do anything that day. It just didn't work out at all, so I'm going to be honest about that. That brings us to basically what was yesterday, September 10th, Saturday, the two films. So the first one we have here is Ghost Riders from 1987. This film is rated R. It's 1 hour and 25 minutes long. All right, so it's experiencing, well, I guess in a way it is experiencing its 35th anniversary. Someone gave me a copy of this film to watch. So the copy they gave me was okay. It wasn't fantastic. So I'm not too sure where they actually got it from. So we'll just have to deal with that factor in life. Anyway, the film was directed by Alan Stewart. The writers were Clay McBride and James... let's see here. Oh, look at that. We don't even have it. Oh, there it is. So sorry. I'm jumping down a line when I should be looking up. Excuse me. James... Oh, I don't know how to say that last name. D-E-S-M-A-R-A-I-S. As for who it stars, well, that's a little bit easier. I'm sorry. Look, it's a live show, okay? I'm doing my best here. Live recording. I do not go back and re-record stuff. I don't do that. I just go with it, roll the dice, and keep going. We got Jim Peters, Bill Shaw, Carrie Powell, and Ricky Long. As for the coming release of the movie, that came out in 88 for USA and all types of media, was Film Trust. Summary, an outlaw gang hanged by a posse in the late 1880s comes back from the grave to terrorize the descendants of the posse leader. The movie has got a 3.4 out of 10, which is about a fair number. I would have probably just said 3 out of 10. It was released in the UK video premiere in September the 10th. So, that's great for me because that's on our anniversary, watching the film on the day it was originally released, 1987. So a little trivia about this. This was actually filmed in Clifton, Texas, at the Texas Safari Ranch. And just to let you know, this is a real interesting kind of part of the subgenres in horror. It is, again, one of those rarities where we mix the Westerns with horror. It doesn't happen that often. Probably the existence of the entire horror genre, there's about 197, and I put a little asterisk next to that because there could be a few others out there, depending on how they cross over each other, that make up this list. And if you're curious really what that comes down to on the films, just so you guys are aware, I just kind of picked out a few. One of the earliest ones was Lightning Bryce from 1919. The 80s really kind of stormed in here with quite a few, actually. Ghost Town from 1988. And Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat in 1989. There's probably a few others out there, of course. But again, it's a rarity. It's not something that everybody likes. So you're either going to like your... how should I put this? You're either going to like to have different genres playing in with each other, or you're not. There's really no other way to say it. You're either going to, if you like Westerns, then maybe you'll like this. If you don't like Westerns, then you're not. If you're kind of curious, there is a film, I don't remember the year, but it's called The Curse of the 49er. So that one also does a little play in there with the Westerns, so you guys can enjoy that too. And have that as a treat. But for the most part, there's just not a lot out there to really, get a real handle on. So you're going to have to pick and choose on your own. All right, a couple more little thoughts on this film. This is an obscure movie, okay? Let's get that straight right now. It's probably forgotten by most people. I have to be honest. I've seen a lot of movies. I mean, a lot of movies. I never heard of this one. This one escaped my radar. So that should tell you something there. Basically, obviously, it's got a lot of that ghostly format to it. It's an interesting film, to put it the least. I mean, this was probably originally a Prism Video release. Super ultra low budget. I mean, there's no question about that. If you're familiar with films like Satan's Blade, then you kind of understand where this movie's coming from. It's weird, but not like you can't watch it. So I'm just giving you a couple warnings here. It's an interesting movie. There's a lot of unusual things going on in the movie, to say the least. It's got some horror tropes that you would find in some teen horror films of nowadays, even. And it does kind of touch on some other matters in the film, but it's just, I don't know, one step of weirdness. But yet, I find it interesting because it's something that most people don't know about. It's one of those movies that you really, really don't know about. If you went up to people and you asked them to name you horror Western movies from the mid-80s or to about 87, I wonder if they would even say Ghost Riders. I would be shocked if they did. Okay? And then you would have to ask them, did you hear that on Baron's Crypt Visions of Horror show? Because there's no way you probably knew about that movie. So, you know, put that out there for you all. All right. Before we get into the bonus film that I watched also yesterday, we're going to play Harley Poe's The Hearse Song. After we play that, you'll definitely understand the reason why.
White sheet from your head down to your feet. They put you in a big black box and cover you up with dirt and rocks. And all goes well for about a week. And then your coffin begins to leak. And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. The worms play pinochle on your snout. They eat your eyes, they eat your nose, they eat the jelly between your toes. A big green worm with rolling eyes crawls in your stomach and out your eyes. Your stomach turns a slimy green and pus pours out like whipping cream. You spread it on a slice of bread, and that's what you eat when you're dead. And the worms crawl out, the worms crawl in, the worms that crawl in are lean and thin, the ones that crawl out are fat and stout. Your eyes fall in and your hair falls out, your brain comes tumbling down your snout. And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, they crawl chest caves in, and your eyes pop out, and your brain turns to sauerkraut. They invite their friends, and their friends too. They all come down to chew on you, and this is what it is to die. I hope you had a nice goodbye. Did you ever think, as a hearse goes by, that you may be the next to die? And your eyes fall out and your teeth decay, and that is the end of a perfect day.
All right, so you may be curious of why we played The Hearse Song. We played it because this film is called Back from the Dead, 1957. It's an hour and about 19 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube, is one place. So now the reason why. When you read A Remembrance of the Dead for September, so you have to wait till the September issue comes out, you will find out that Marsha Hunt passed away. Age 104. She pretty much stopped doing acting work in about 2008. And her official date of death was September 6th. And it's with that I always try to watch a film of someone who passes. That's just something I try to do. It doesn't always happen that way. This kind of came across this week. Somebody left a post-it. They just put down Marsha Hunt 104. And when people do that, I will post it and put it on my kind of computer screen, if you would. I look at that and I'm like, that means something. And usually I try to tell them, hey, put DOD, date of death, rest in peace, something. And when I looked it up, you know, it wasn't on her date of death. It was already passed. So I was like, okay, not a problem. Let's find a film. There's got to be a movie out there. And I wanted to pick this one also, mainly because I think she really only did two actual movies of horror. And this one is celebrating its 65th anniversary this year. So, hence, make it another reason to watch this film and, you know, to kind of remember her. And she has, I think she's like the third person named on the opening credits. So, you know, she's prominently featured in the film. So, the film was directed by Charles M. Warner, the writer, who also bases this off of her own novel, The Other One, which I think is now totally out of print, couldn't find it anywhere, is Catherine Turney. It stars Peggy Castle, who also was in another film from 1957 called The Beginning of the End. And we have author Franz, Marsha Hunt, Don Haggerty, Marie-Anne Stewart, and Janine Bates. The film was originally put out by 20th Century Fox. It's got a 5.2 out of 10. It's a fair movie, okay? 4.5 would be fine. It's a fair movie. Nothing that's going to really get you all riled up in any way. Originally was released on August 12th of 1957. And here's a summary. Having lost his first wife, Felicia, which is played by Peggy, in a tragic drowning accident 6 years earlier, Dick Anthony, played by Don Haggerty, has now recently remarried. All right. However, his new wife, Mandy, also played by Peggy, suddenly takes ill after a strange seizure. She becomes possessed by the soul of Felicia. We soon find out that prior to her death, Felicia began practicing the dark arts. Ooh. And the deeper she got, the more evil she became. So, that is because she is so evil that both Dick and Mandy's sister, Kate, which is played by Marsha Hunt, begin looking for a way to bring Mandy back. So, it's an interesting type of possession movie, but with not all the possession you can imagine. So, you know, it's what it is, okay? Really no trivia on the movie. A simple tagline. Did she come back to love or kill his wife, his first wife, in his second wife's body? Interesting enough, right? My opinion, basically, this is a really rough diamond. It needs love, okay? That's what the film needs. You have to be really dedicated to watching this. A couple ones I've found on Daily Motion and a couple other places. Really shoddy copies. I mean, a lot of pops and a lot of it needs refinement. It needs a total I don't know what's the right word for that, but it just needs to be cleaned really well, done really well. But you know, it's a movie. It's out there. It's something that you can enjoy. It's not like completely unwatchable. It's not scary. It's not creepy by any means. So don't get me wrong. It tries to give a little eeriness, but it's really stretching, if you would. Kind of reminds me a little What Lies Beneath, but not all the way, obviously. So, you know, again, the entire reason for just tacking this other film on was to kind of honor Marsha Hunt. And like I said, I like to do that by including another film, you know, that somebody, you know, they passed away that week. It's very easy for me to go and find the film. I try to add it into the selection. Does that always happen? Of course not. Now, that really basically brings us to the end of the week. So I think you guys realize, you know, we're still tweaking the show, like I said, and we're still making the adjustments. And that's going to happen. That is going to be a normal activity. Okay? As we do this, we're going to get people to say, you know, I like this. I don't like that. I want more of this. I want less of that. And I will honestly sit here and tell you that I will try to accommodate everybody's input. Sometimes it's going to work. Sometimes it isn't. In addition, I do want to give a little note here of some shows today. So obviously, this show, you're hearing it, you're listening to it, when it actually aired, went off at basically 10 or 11 o'clock, depending on how we all slated it into the slot. Earlier today, should have played Hard Rock Madness, show number 53, which was ode to, or thanks maybe, to Small Stone Recordings label. We have played a lot of the music over the years for Hard Rock Madness, and we decided, let's give big thanks to them by doing that. In addition, a couple programming notes for you. We have the Baron's Crypt show coming up on tomorrow, Monday. That is going to be the topic of vampires. Why? Because, let's face it, we got a lot of vampire things going on. A lot of interesting news stories, some other things. So we figured, why not? Let's do that. Also, the Baron's Crypt on Wednesday is going to be having a special show, the New Jersey HorrorCon promo show. That's right. Every time that comes around, we do a promo show for the New Jersey one. Maybe in the future we'll do a promo show for the PA, but for right now we did it for New Jersey. We're going to be trying to fit in a Sinister Death show some point this coming week to give thanks out to the label Barbarian Wrath. So that'll be pretty cool. And I'm not too sure where the next Visions of Horror show is going to line in there, because we got the HorrorCon that we're attending. So we're going to be trying to fit that either to air on late Saturday or sometime on early / late Sunday. So you guys will just have to play with that. It's going to be on the weekend, but I can't guarantee which day and time slot that's going to fit into. There won't be a Baron's Crypt on Friday night because, well, I'll be at the con. So I can't do both things at once. And most people that would be listening to the Crypt show might be at either at a con or getting ready for going to haunted houses and such. So you already have two shows that week, so you won't need another one. We might be doing a Shredding Metal Beast show on Tuesday night, to be also aware of that. So where can you find all this information? Well, that's easy. You're going to go to thehorrortimes.com. Scroll all the way down to podcast, and then you'll be able to find out checking the shows down there. You'll be going, oh, look, I think these are new shows. And yes, there'll be new shows listed there. So you guys will be set to enjoy all that. If you can, we'll give a shout out right now to the New Jersey HorrorCon. Check it out. It's at Atlantic City at the Showboat Hotel. going from the 16th, 17th, and 18th. Starts 5 o'clock on the 16th, runs to about probably 10 or 11. Saturday, if you can only go one day, Saturday is your day to go. $35 cash, probably $8 to park and a couple tolls on the way. You're looking at a lot of activities, big bang for your buck. Even if you can't afford any signatures, you can still go and have a good time. Otherwise, we're going to kind of close it out here with another track from Nimvid. I believe the song is going to be Like a Guillotine. And then we're also going to play one other song to kind of just give you a little bit more of a treat. It's going to be Arcana 13. That's the band's name with the track Suspiria. I think it's a pretty good track there. You guys would definitely like it. It's about close to a 7-minute long track. So just enjoy it and go and like the bands. So we'll put all their information on the script so you guys can easily find them all. Otherwise, hey, thanks for tuning in. Hope you guys will like the Baron's Crypt on Facebook. Also like the Hard Times on Facebook. And be sure to check out the Hard Times site itself. If you've got any questions, requests, or movies I should watch or see, always let me know through the Facebook Messenger. Just reach out for Baron Craze or hit up one of the sites and you should be able to reach me. If not, you can also find me on Twitter, so check that out too. You know, like, follow, all that great stuff. And the message should get to me there too. All right, so you all take care. Have a safe September 11th and a good week. Let you all kitties enjoy your horror. There should be some gashly good fun coming your way soon.
Start screaming through your mind.